Can the federal government take our 401k and bank accounts? I'm hearing this on the Glenn Beck radio show. Is there any truth to this, Dean?
No.
Pretty self-explanatory.
Look, your 401k assets are probably the most protected asset that a person can have. They're even protected from bankruptcy. Now, if you are breaking the law, you're doing income tax evasion, and you've been found out by the IRS that you've done, you know, things, and you owe a bunch of money and you have money in your 401k, yeah, they're going to go after it.
Starting your route to retirement.
Hello, this is Dean Barber, your host of The Guided Retirement Show. This is the season finale for season 6 of The Guided Retirement Show. This is our question answering session. I've got Chris Rett, certified financial planner professional, with me here today to answer all of your questions that you have submitted either through YouTube or through email. And I want to let you know before we really get started here that as we go through and give advice here and answer these questions, this is not intended for you to go make decisions on because we don't have nearly enough information to give a perfect answer for you. And that'll come out more in my conversation with Chris Rett. Throughout the show, we'll invite you to go to a link in the show notes where you can request a 20-minute Ask Anything session for you personally with one of our certified financial planners. So please enjoy my conversation with Chris Rett, CFP professional. All right. So Chris Rett, certified financial planner professional, you were with me on the first episode of questions from our listeners.
Yep.
And so here we are again. That was episode 50, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided to do this on a regular occasion because we do get a lot of questions.
Yeah.
And so
a lot of good questions.
A lot of good questions. So let's get started, Chris. And looks like our first one comes from Rob in Arkansas.
Yep. So Rob in Arkansas says, guys, I'm trying to get ready for retirement. I have some savings, an annuity, and two different 401k plans. One is through work and the other is a personal one. How can I calculate an estimated income for retirement? I want to find out how much more I need to be able to save and afford retirement.
All right, so this is really I think the number one question on people's minds as they're headed into retirement is, do I have enough?
Mm-hmm.
Have I saved enough? Do I need to save more?
Correct.
And the only way that you can effectively do that is by going into the future and then coming back to the present. And what I mean by that is you have to first lay out what is your expenses going to be in retirement. You've got your necessary expenses.
Yep.
And then you've got your discretionary expenses.
Yep.
You need to be factoring in things such as new car purchases throughout the years, potential repairs to homes throughout the years, family vacations, other
weddings,
types of vacation.
Education. Yeah. Yep.
You really need to spend some time with a good certified financial planner like Chris Rett here. He can he can actually walk you through the whole process.
Absolutely.
Even virtually from Arkansas there, Rob. And go through, you know, where you're at today, what it is that you need to spend, and then based on all the resources that you have, and then based on how you decide to distribute that money, there can be some very effective ways to maximize Social Security. There can be some very effective ways to minimize taxes.
Yeah.
And so until you know the answer to all of those pieces, you really won't be able to know for sure if you have enough and if you've done it all right.
Yeah, and I think the misconception here is a common one is that I need $1 million. I need that nest egg of $1 million. And that number is unique for everybody because everybody, like you said, everybody's retirement is unique. Is it single filer? Is it, you know, joint filer? I mean, these tax codes are different. So there's, like you said, a lot of moving pieces. It's not a one size fits all. And we have clients that have $1 million and sometimes that isn't enough. So it's not $1 million. It really comes down to, like you said, income sources and expenses.
Right. And you remember, Chris, we did close to a year ago, a video on retiring with $1 million.
Yep.
And we pointed out in that video on retiring with $1 million that you could have a couple that's got $750,000 versus somebody that's got $1 million. And if the right financial planning and tax planning techniques were applied, that couple with the 750 could have the exact same income as the couple with the million.
Absolutely.
So it's not a dollar amount that you have saved. It's what you do with it in those years leading up to and then through Retirement. And there'll be a link to figure out how to watch that video in the show notes, as well as if you'd like to, anybody listening, if you want to schedule a complimentary consultation or even just a 20-minute Ask Anything session with Chris Rett, one of our certified financial planners here, or any of our certified financial planners, you can do that also through a link in the show notes.
Absolutely. Yep. Great question, though. Great. That was a great question. So Janet from Missouri says, my husband saw Biden signed an executive order to do away with money and go digital. Can this happen?
So first of all, that's not what happened. It was an executive order to ensure responsible innovation in digital assets. And there's a lot going on in the digital asset world, the cryptocurrency world. It really has more to do with the application of blockchain technology and how can it be utilized in our banking system? How can it be utilized in our financial system? And one day, things will be more digital than they are today, but there's still going to have to be an asset that backs that digital currency. It's like every time I go into a restaurant, a grocery store, a gas station, or whatever, I use my phone to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's digital.
That's digital.
I'm paying digitally.
Yep.
Now, it comes right out of my checking account, and yes, it's still dollars that are being spent. My feeling is that in the future, there's going to be much more innovation for business-to-business transaction in that digital world, but it doesn't mean that the dollar goes away.
Sure. No, and I think that I remember back to our first time doing this, you mentioned Roths for the first time, and people, you know, were skeptical, and the government was behind it. I think this is, like what you said, this is it's more looking at the benefits of what can come out of digital currency rather than something that is to be looked or feared from.
Now, if there was somebody that was going to do it, it would probably be Biden. But I just, you know, we can remove politics.
So. Yeah, exactly. So John, also from Missouri, says, I'm receiving a pension and Social Security, but I'm working full time. Can I still contribute to my tax-deferred IRA and my wife's deductible IRA? I'm not covered at work by a retirement plan. Also, what are the income maximums when filing jointly on my taxes to fund my IRA?
All right, Chris, you've got the cheat sheet there for the income limits for being able to fully deduct an IRA for a married couple. What is that?
Yep. So if one spouse is covered by a plan, I'm showing that phase out starts at $204,000 combined.
And what if no spouse is covered? Still the same, I think.
I think, yeah.
So it still would be the same thing. So the phase out begins at $204,000. The question, John, would be also, would it be smart to do the traditional deductible IRA, or would it make sense to potentially use some of the money that you would be putting into those traditional IRAs and using that money to pay the tax to convert traditional IRAs over to Roth IRAs? And so the answer to that question comes, and it really goes back to Rob's question from Arkansas.
Absolutely.
How do you maximize what you have?
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to put money into a deductible IRA doesn't always make the most sense. And what John's asking really would be part of a forward-looking tax planning strategy to make sure that you're doing it properly.
Yeah, and that's really a great question to take a peek in and what we do a little bit behind the scenes, different from a lot of firms out there that are looking and saying, hey, you want to maximize your deductible IRAs this year because it'll reduce taxes today, but
right.
We're also looking at a very tax-friendly environment. So this is actually a multi-year question that he's asking rather than just a 2022 question.
That's exactly right. Because you got to take a look at the whole picture, really. But the answer to the question was $204,000.
Yep.
All right. But I don't want John from Missouri to just say, okay, well, we'll fully fund those deductible IRAs. You can do that, obviously, but again, through a link in the show notes, you can schedule a 20-minute Ask Anything session with one of our certified financial planners, and they can walk you through, ask you some questions, and then try to get a better idea of whether you should be doing deductible or Roth.
Yeah. So Mark from Kansas, can the federal government take our 401k and bank accounts? I'm hearing this on the Glenn Beck radio show. Is there any truth to this, Dean?
No.
Pretty self-explanatory.
Look, your 401k assets are probably the most protected asset that mm-hmm. a person can have. They're even protected from bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are very strict laws around that. Now, if you are breaking the law, you're doing income tax evasion, and you've been found out by the IRS that you've done, you know, things, and you owe a bunch of money and you have money in your 401k, yeah, they're going to go after it.
Sure. Yeah, but that's a one-off and that's deserving. But the government, in essence, is not trying to seize your 401ks.
No.
William from Illinois, if you're in a position where you have the option of paying off a home mortgage or investing that money in the market, which one is typically the best approach to choose regarding the long-term big picture? We get asked this fairly decent amount.
It's a big question, and the prevailing answer will always depend on the interest rate that's on your mortgage, right? So as an example, if you have a mortgage and you're headed into retirement and that mortgage is, say, let's say you got a $300,000 mortgage and it's at 3.5%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got $300,000 in the bank. Should you take that $300,000 and just pay that mortgage off? I would say no, because the interest rate is so low.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's recently purchased and they're getting 5.25%, and what they're anticipating by the end of the year is a 30-year mortgage being as high as 6.75%. That changes the dynamic mm-hmm. quite a bit. Just as an example, and this, by the way, is not an investment recommendation for William from Illinois. But the thing is that there are products out there, investment vehicles out there that can do what you want to do to generate the income.
Mm-hmm.
So there are very safe, what are called fixed to float notes.
Sure.
And those fixed to float notes will give you a fixed interest rate for a specified period of time. And once that specified period of time is up, the interest rate will actually float. So an example of something that I did for one of our clients here at Barber Financial Group just a few weeks ago was we bought a fixed to float note that would be callable or mature in August of 2024. 4.75% return between now and August of 2024. And in August of 2024, the interest rate would float to be equal to the five-year treasury yield plus 3.18%. So the five-year treasury yield today is about 3%.
Sure.
So if you fast forward, and if this was August of 2024, you'd actually be getting paid now 6.18%.
Yeah.
So the thing is, I wouldn't say the stock market is the place to be for something like this.
Right.
And you need to do something that's liquid all the time. So if in the event you change your mind in the future, you can go in and do that. But in most cases, if you have the cash and your interest rates are low, you'll be able to generate enough income off that cash to actually make the mortgage payment.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, if the mortgage is paid off and you still have the cash and all you do is spend the interest on it, it's much better for the long-term picture.
Absolutely. And you have that flexibility. But ultimately, I think the bottom line is there is a lot of opportunity cost that you're giving up by paying off the mortgage when you really don't necessarily need to.
Right.
Now,
because you can create the same cash flow structure, right? As long
exactly.
As you, and, yep. And I've even set up scenarios in the past, Chris, where we'll make an investment and the investment is designed specifically to pay the mortgage. And so we just do a systematic withdrawal that goes directly to the mortgage company every month. And so those people don't have to worry about making that mortgage payment anymore.
Yep. Nope. That's exactly true. So I think that's a good point. But also, this doesn't give us an excuse to over leverage on something that we might not be able to afford in retirement for the sake of saying, hey, you know, opportunity cost. We're talking about, again, a responsible mortgage that we have the money. Do we pay off the mortgage, or do we look at some of these other avenues like you discussed?
Absolutely.
So Karen from Kansas, do you have any recommendation for the best resource to search different state tax laws for federal retirement?
I don't. Do you know of any, Chris?
I don't. No, I mean, we can always look up what the state tax laws are for different states if you want. Again, that could be our 20-minute ask anything. You know?
I don't know that there's one spot to go to that outlines how every single state treats. I'm assuming we're talking about federal retirement pension benefits.
Sure.
Now, you go to the states in which there is no state income tax. That's a pretty no-brainer.
Absolutely.
But as far as states that have an income tax that wouldn't tax your federal retirement benefits, I'm not aware of a site that does that.
No. And I know for some of our federal employees, too, they can always go to TSP, and there's usually a list there that okay. they can that has different states that are more tax-friendly for TSPs. But as a general resource, that would be just, again, a great 20-minute ask anything.
Yeah, always do that through the link in the show notes.
So Stuart from Kansas, in what ways can a retired person convert IRA funds to a Roth IRA account as a way to realize overall income tax savings? Is it possible to make such a conversion even if the retiree has no W-2 income?
That's a good question, and this is a really misunderstood tax strategy. When you're converting money from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, it becomes a taxable event in the year that you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you want to look at is, what are the long-term implications of not doing the Roth conversion? How much will the required minimum distributions be in the future? What tax bracket will that put you into the future? You also want to look at whether or not doing a Roth conversion is going to trigger an IRMA tax. You also want to figure out whether that Roth conversion is going to cause, more Social Security to be taxable. That Roth conversion could also cause capital gains that were otherwise not taxable to be taxable,
mm-hmm.
Qualified dividends that were otherwise not taxable to be taxable. So, Stuart, what this really requires is a year-by-year look at your personal tax situation. And this is really part of a long-term tax plan. And so you kind of go back to what we were talking about a little bit ago, Chris. What we have to do is we have to draw up the financial plan,
mm-hmm.
and we have to understand what expenses are going to be there in the future. We have to then understand what resources you have overall. And then we can actually put together a side-by-side comparison that says, if you don't do any conversions, this is what your long-term situation looks like. This is what your wealth accumulation is going to look like. This is what your tax situation is going to look like. If you do conversions in whatever amount, it would be something we would talk about.
Sure.
What does that do to your long-term tax situation? And what does that do to your long-term wealth accumulation? Because ultimately, most people that have retired and have wealth, at some point, that wealth will pass to the next generation. And so the taxes don't stop when it passes to the next generation. So you can't just look at that in a vacuum and say, during my life, how does this work? You have to say, throughout the life of the investment, how does this work? And how do I get as much wealth transfer as possible?
That's exactly right. And I think there is a common misconception when it comes to Roth, is I think now looking at it as we love the idea of no taxation, right? But we don't want to necessarily overdo it in a particular year, like you mentioned, all the moving pieces. So this is unfortunately not just a very straightforward, simple answer. It is very complex. There's a lot of moving pieces. And again, it comes back, we say it again, there's every situation is unique. You know?
And it all comes back to the overall plan. It's interesting. Just had Ed Slott on one of Ed, of course, is America's IRA expert, and I've been a part of Ed's organization now for almost 20 years. And he thinks that the Roth portion of the tax code is the very best part of the tax code that's ever written.
Mm-hmm.
And, it makes sense in so many circumstances. It doesn't always make sense.
Sure.
But it does make sense in so many circumstances.
It does, yeah. And I think, too, is one of the things that we didn't touch on, and you mentioned it, but wealth transfer.
Yeah.
Is that if that is something, I just unfortunately met with clients today that their loved one passed, and it was all tax deferred, and they didn't understand the tax implications of receiving that money, and said, well, what ways are there to avoid this? Could this have been avoided? And so there are.
Could have been avoided. And the problem is, think about this. The people that inherit money are typically in their 50s, maybe early 60s. And they're inheriting
high-earning years. Yeah.
They're inheriting that money in their high-earning years. And the SECURE Act that was signed into law here a few years ago essentially now is going to force all of that money out of the IRA within a 10-year period to the beneficiary. So if you're already in your peak earning years and now you got more taxable money thrown out there, coming out of the IRA because it has to,
yeah,
that money could be taxed at a much higher rate than it was ever deferred at.
Yeah.
And so the opportunity to do some conversions prior to passing that money down, where you could do it in a lower tax bracket, makes all the sense in the world.
It does. It does. And it's a call to action from the 40 and 50-year-olds out there who are watching this to say, hey, if mom and dad are secure and they have enough money and their intention is to transfer some of the wealth, it may be worth it for them to sit down and say, hey, does it make sense for us to start Roth converting in hopes of transferring this to our you know, kids in the most tax efficient way. So, and again, always utilizing our 20 minute ask anything.
Absolutely. Which obviously is through a link in the show notes.
Oh, and then the second part of that, we did skip over that. Is it possible to do without W-2 income?
100%. You do not have to have W-2 income to do Roth conversions. You have to have W-2 income to make Roth contributions. You have to have earned income.
Yep.
And that'd be W-2. It can be, you can be an independent contractor or something like that. As long as you have earned income, you can do a Roth contribution, but you can always do a Roth conversion.
Absolutely. So SB from our YouTube on the Ed Slot series, I was forced into early retirement due to my health. My plan is to stay within this year's 12% tax bracket, which means I can take out around $30,000 for the rest of this year. I have savings, which I use to live on. That won't work next year. So anything left, I will roll over my Roth from my 401k. But is there limits on rollovers? I know there is a limit on adding, but I plan to do that every year until either I kick the bucket or run out of 401k plan. So a lot of words there.
Yeah. So the two main points here is there a limit to how much she can roll over from her Roth 401k? And the answer is no, there is no limit.
There is
none. Now, if you've got a 401k that's got Roth portion in the 401k, that'll go directly to a Roth when you do your rollover. If you've got pieces in there from a company match, or you had pre-tax or traditional 401k options in there, that piece will be rolled over to a traditional IRA. Now, on the limit on adding the $6,500 requires
piggybacking off our last question.
Yeah, you got to have earned income in order to make those $6,500 contributions. So unless SB is planning on getting a job and earning at least $6,500, she will not be able to contribute to that Roth IRA once she retires.
Yep, that's exactly right. So again, you could utilize Roth conversion there. Again, if you're looking to maintain a certain tax bracket, that's why it makes sense to, again, see if it makes sense to do Roth conversions. But you're absolutely right. Have to earn money to be able to contribute that.
Yep.
JJ from YouTube on the Roth conversions episode with Joanne. So if both husband and wife are in their 70s and taking RMDs, which are required minimum distributions, as required and are working, at what point do you consider, is it still worth it, not worth it, to do a Roth conversion and or a backdoor Roth? JJ notes also good point about taxable rate changing when one passes. I think that's something we should talk about too at the end. But
that's a great question. So as far as whether it makes sense to do a Roth conversion and or a backdoor Roth, will again go back to the long-term plan.
Mm-hmm.
These questions can all be answered, and they can be answered very, very specifically with data to back up the answer. But until that plan is done, there's really no way to know whether or not you should start doing a Roth conversion now or whether you should consider a backdoor Roth. That's a tough question to answer without
knowing more about the
personal situation. But, you know, obviously that's what we do, right? We got to dig in, and it's almost like you're trying to send a note to, to a doctor and saying, "Hey doc, this is the symptoms that I've got. Can you send me some drugs to make me feel better?" Well, no, we really want to run some tests before
Absolutely.
We start prescribing anything. And so that's really the way I look at our consultation is we're digging in, we're asking a lot of questions, we're understanding more about that person's personal situation before we start prescribing any type of solution.
No, and using that analogy is a great one, is that everybody runs to Tylenol or Excedrin or whatnot for headaches, but you take too much of it and it has an adverse effect. That can be similar to a Roth conversion. It looks good and it looks like it could be a potentially great thing, but overdoing it can have an adverse effect.
It can, especially when you're 70s and taking RMDs and still working.
Yep. But also to highlight, I think JJ there makes a great point about when you're in your 70s and one spouse passes away.
Oh my gosh. That's something that almost nobody really considers unless you're working with a CFP.
It's a tough conversation to have.
Well, what happens is you got the rates sheet here. Yeah. Let's just take a quick look at that, Chris. So what happens here is if you're married filing jointly, and I'm just going to go to the 22% tax bracket, you're in the 22% tax bracket between 83 551 and 178, 150. So all the money in that range of income is in the 22% tax bracket. But if you're in the single taxpayer, so you're going to be single taxpayer if one spouse dies, your 22% bracket only runs from 41 to 89,000. And anything above 89,000 is now at the 24% bracket. And if you get above 170, you're going to be taxed at the 32% bracket. So you have to figure out, health is a big issue. Longevity of each spouse is a big issue. But if you don't take into consideration that tax increase that the surviving spouse is going to have, then the plan can blow up. Or you wind up paying far more in taxes than what you need to.
I can't tell you how many times we sit down with clients and their biggest concern is making sure that they don't outlive their money, right? But what we don't often talk about, and one thing that we stress test, is unfortunately one passing away too early and the stress that that has on a plan.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've seen, obviously I've been doing this for 35 years and I've had to have my share of conversations when somebody passed away. Now we got the surviving spouse and here's the different tax bracket. But, thank God we did the Roth conversions when we were able to at a much lower rate. So now we can control that tax bracket for the surviving spouse.
That's exactly right. So another YouTube viewer, BMX Mom, asks, I maxed out my 401k and I maxed out my Roth inside my 401k. Can I do a Roth conversion within my 401k to my Roth 401k? How do annuities affect all of this?
Okay, so annuities really will have no effect on it. And the answer is yes, you can do a conversion inside your 401k from the traditional part to the Roth part. How much you should convert, again, will depend on where you're at in your tax bracket. So we can go back to our handy tax guide here. And let's say that the income, that this lady's income is, say, $90,000 a year, where we know from 90,000 up to 178,000, she's going to be in a 22% tax bracket. So if you wanted to convert all the way up into the 22% tax bracket, you could convert about $90,000 and still stay in that 22% bracket. So what you want to ask yourself is, what is my tax bracket going to look like once I do retire and start taking distributions out of my 401k or IRA rollover? And is that going to be at a higher rate than the 22%, or will it be at a lower rate than the 22%? So again, we got to look into the future to come back and answer the question, should you do it? Yes, correct. You can do it, but the question is, should you do it?
And you see now the complexities of some of this is now we're forced to ask a question that nobody really knows the answer to, is what are the tax rates going to be here in the next 4 or 5 years?
Right. And I think we know generally, and we can plan for that. But the question, the way that you really figure it out, Chris, is through the plan and how much income you want to have in retirement, then what are all the sources of that income and how is each source going to be taxed? And that's where you wind up getting down to kind of the magic formula. There's a real art to putting this together and answering these questions.
And the final piece, which is also tough and which complicates just a straightforward answer, is it's different for everybody. Is we can show you on paper, going back to the question on paying off the mortgage, is there is somewhat subjectiveness to some of these questions. Now it's our job to be thorough and show you on paper what the best decision is, but ultimately our philosophy is arming our clients with that information so they can make really what the best decision for themselves.
Exactly.
James Bond, all the way from London, on YouTube. Two individuals at full retirement age. They both apply for Social Security and Medicare benefits. One has $3 million in a traditional 401k, and the other has $3 million in a Roth 401k. Will they be taxed the same on their Social Security, and will their Medicare payments be the same?
The answer is no. They will be totally different. The Roth IRA is magical in this sense, whether it's Roth IRA or Roth 401k. So what happens is on the traditional 401k or traditional IRA, every dollar you take out is treated as ordinary income. And so under the rules of how you calculate the taxability of your Social Security, you have to add all ordinary or taxable income to 50% of the total Social Security payments. And if that exceeds $32,000, then up to 50% of your Social Security becomes taxable. And if it exceeds $44,000, then up to 85% of the Social Security becomes taxable. The crazy thing about the Roth is that none of the distributions that come out of the Roth show up anywhere on your tax return. And so there is, it doesn't affect. So essentially the person that has a $3 million in the Roth is going to have a totally tax-free retirement because Social Security by itself will not be taxed.
Not only that, but you're not going to face, as you mentioned earlier, IRMA.
IRMA, yep, the higher Medicare premiums.
Yep. And not only that, so again, going back to our previous, we haven't touched on it that much, but if your full retirement age in about 5 years, depending on what your full retirement age is, one's going to be affected with required minimum distributions, the other won't.
That's right. So the bottom line is, if the money stays with inside the plan, yes, Social Security and Medicare will be exactly the same. But once the money starts coming out, and you make a good point, Chris, at age 72, you have to start taking the required minimum distribution out of the traditional. There's not even a required minimum distribution on the Roth side. Our government couldn't really make this any more complicated. I call it the Full Employment Act for Certified Financial Planners.
That's exactly. It's good job security for
us. Yeah.
Kevin from Minnesota, how will Social Security cost of living adjustment, also known as COLA, affect me at my age of 64 and I'm not collecting benefits?
So the cool thing about the COLA benefits on Social Security is once you reach your minimum eligibility age of age 62, the COLA benefits start getting applied to your Social Security amount. So you're going to see next year when you get your statement of what your Social Security estimates are, they're going to have increased by the 5.9%.
Mm-hmm.
So it all the way to age 70, that stays in deferment. That's why a lot of people don't realize that taking a Social Security at 62 versus 70, in most cases, you'll get twice as much money at age 70 as you did at age 62.
We see three-quarters up to $1 million difference, depending again on age, how long the person lives. But if you, again, good health, and if you plan to be around for a while, we can see dramatic differences in Social Security. So that is a very important aspect of retirement planning.
Great question.
So Julie from Missouri, my husband is deceased. We're sorry to hear about that, Julie. But Julie is 61. She can't collect Social Security, or Julie is saying, I can't collect Social Security on my survivor's benefit until I'm at retirement age, which she thinks for her age is 67. Then whoever has the most benefits would be what I receive, which would be hers. Social Security told me if I tried to collect on his that they would take that payment every month. She doesn't understand that. I guess what I need to do is wait until either she retires at 67 or 70 to collect on her own, or would she just never collect any of his? So a lot to unpack there.
Yeah, and this is something that I'd have to do a little bit of research on to really be 100% correct on this.
Sure.
But I believe what might be happening here is Julie is still working.
Yep.
And she's not full retirement age yet. So if Julie's still working, not full retirement age yet, then any Social Security that she would receive would be reduced by $1 for every $2 that she would earn over, I think the limit's around $13,000. So
it might even be a little bit higher, but yeah.
But that's the point. So if that reduction would apply, and based on how much money Julie's making today, it could be that she could turn it on, but she's not going to get any of the money because she's earning too much.
Correct. And because the first thing that she pointed out is she can't collect it until she's full retirement age is incorrect. Is she can start at age 60, but what Social Security may not have relayed to her is because she's working.
Right.
So there is circumstantial here taking place rather than a universal law. So,
absolutely.
John from Missouri, I plan to take Social Security at my full retirement age of 67. We are planning for my wife to take hers at 62. Her Social Security, that is, sorry. If I die first, does her amount then bump up to the higher amount?
Yes, it does. So what happens is whether John has started his Social Security or not, if he were to pass away, even before he started, his wife will get his if it's bigger. So the easiest way to think about the rules on survivor benefits for Social Security is The smaller check always stops. The larger check always continues.
So, and that's a common misconception that I hear a lot too, is they a lot of families, and this goes back to a spouse unfortunately passing away too early, is okay, we factor in this social security amount coming in, but they don't realize as one passes, then the lower amount falls off as well.
Yep. And that's something that when you're doing your planning, you have to take into consideration. Remember how we were talking about the tax bracket creep or the jumping up for the single taxpayer? You always have to understand that the smaller Social Security check is going to go away. So it's not just a dollar for dollar increase. You know, I don't want people to get confused about that, but you need to know what the income sources will be after one spouse passes away to really calculate what the tax burden would be.
That's exactly right. Okay. Natalie from Kansas, do you have a source for people looking to acquire health insurance prior to Medicare?
Absolutely. We certainly do. We can put you in contact with that individual. His name's Taylor Garner. He's going to be part of an educational series that we're doing here and may even be done. I can't remember, but I know we did it. I just don't know if we've released it yet. But you can message us through a link in the show notes, and we will be happy to provide you with Taylor's contact information.
Yeah, and we don't want that to be a reason why somebody doesn't think that they can retire because they're not age 65 yet. We have a lot of clients that want to retire really from that 59 and a half that they can start taking distributions from IRA or 401k all the way to 65. It does require some additional planning, but we don't want that to be a deterrent for somebody looking to retire.
Right. And sometimes, you know, people just think, well, I don't want to pay those premiums. Well, okay, but is not paying the premiums, is it worth the trade-off of continuing to work? In other words, Could your plan work if you paid the premiums for those 5 years or whatever? Mm-hmm. And if it's not going to affect your ability to do all the things you want to do in retirement, then retire if that's what you want to do. Don't just work because you think you have to because you don't want to pay those insurance premiums. Get the plan done so that you can see, what does my spending ability look like if I retire now and have to pay those insurance premiums versus if I wait 5 years? What can I spend then? And am I going to have the health to spend it, you know, later on? Because, Chris, we've seen so many cases where people, you know, they work and work and work and they save and they save and they save. And, you know, we just lost a client this last week, and he was only 72 years old, didn't have time to enjoy everything that he and his wife sacrificed for so many years to save.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was always afraid. I'm always afraid he's going to run out of money. And I kept telling him, you got plenty. Mm-hmm. There's no way you can possibly run out of money with the way that you guys spend and the resources that you have. But he was always scared to spend. And so I think that's another thing that the plan can do for people. It's almost like a permission slip. It allows you to say, okay,
it is, yeah.
I can do this.
Yeah. No, and again, so many clients come to us and with such a misconception, which is why we like people reaching out, is because that number is a lot different for everybody. And we say, oh, if you, well, it's always funny to get, you know, clients' reaction to say, hey, if you could retire tomorrow, would you? You know, we haven't done the analysis yet, but we sit down, we meet them, would you? And a lot of times it's usually 50-50, I would, you know, and then we introduce the plan and we show them, yeah, you could. You know, now getting up every day and going to work is a choice. And a lot of people then really sit back and are blown away that they can retire a lot sooner than they want. And that feeds into then, you know, our health. Once we get above 60, is our health is our wealth.
Well, I've seen many cases, Chris, where, you know, you give that information and one of the spouses will start crying. I'm like, really?
Mm-hmm.
We can do that?
Yes.
And yes, you can. And then there's others that, like, you know what? Just knowing that is going to make me go to work with a whole different attitude.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because if I decide, you know, next month, next year, whatever, that I'm done, I'm just going to be done because I know that I'm financially stable and I'm there. And that's what I call financial independence, right? So, Chris, as an example, I could retire tomorrow if I wanted to.
Sure.
I don't want to retire.
Right.
I love what I do. I love helping people. I have a lot of energy left. And you know, I don't want to. But I also don't want to kill myself and sacrifice everything. You know, so that's I think that's kind of getting into the psychological part of financial planning,
yeah.
Which is a really, really big deal.
Yeah.
You know, we ask a question in meetings with people. It's not really a question. It's a series of questions that we consider it to be a prioritization exercise where we start talking about what are the most important things in your life.
Because it is different for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what's interesting? I don't believe we've had one person ever say that my money is the most important thing in my life. It generally has something to do with how they want to live and things that they want to do and people that they want to spend time with and those types of things. That's really what people need to focus on. That's my important stuff. Okay, do I have the resources to be able to do that stuff without working?
Yep.
If you do, then you're financially independent and work is a choice, like you said.
Absolutely. And or how many people do you know that then retire from their job that maybe was a stressor to then start something that they've always wanted to try?
I've seen it happen.
I'm not ready to just do, you know, retire and
do nothing.
Exactly. But also, hey, I've always wanted to take a leap and do X. And yeah. And now that's the comfortability of being able to do that.
Again, that's where when we go through that prioritization exercise, a lot of times we'll see where, you know, one spouse will turn to the other and say, I didn't realize that was important. I didn't know that's something that you wanted to do. And it becomes a very enlightening experience, but that's all part of the planning process.
Yeah. And the flip side of that too, is that if for our clients that maybe aren't financially independent too, is we know the areas that we need to improve to get them there.
Chris, thank you so much for joining me here.
Thanks on for having
our
me.
Questions from our listeners. Don't forget, a link in the show notes will get you to a 20-minute Ask Anything session and also access to any of the resources that we talked about today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Starting your route to retirement.
Investment advisory services offered through Marbur Financial Group and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.